You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Lord of the star fields, Ancient of days, Universe maker, here's a song in your praise.
Well, you know, the difficulty I have with this next interview is I don't like sensationalism. I mean, there's the odd time for goofy, humorous purposes. We can venture down that road. But when it comes to the story that we're about to hear, I remember those days. I remember the sensationalistic headlines. As a matter of fact, somebody just printed a sensationalistic headline about me recently. And I get the idea of drawing people's attention to a story or a topic or a person. But this is something that all Canadians resonate with, especially us here in Ontario. In 1992, Kristen French was abducted, tortured, and murdered by two of Canada's most notorious serial killers, Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka. And today, her sister Pam joins us to help us all understand evil a little better. It's our Halloween special, and we have talked about evil all the way through the show. And, I guess if evil was to be personified here in Canada, at least for us, especially us here in southern Ontario, many of our minds would go to Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka. The hell that their victims went through really pales in comparison to even the recent events with former Colonel Russell Williams. People are comparing these two cases, and I don't think that's fair or right, even. Maybe it's just me, but anyway, every once in a while, we have a journey segment on our show, and this is today's journey segment. I guess the succinct way to describe a journey segment is messy lives with a real God in the middle of it. And boy, life certainly got messy for Pam. And joining us right now is Pam Radunsky. Did I say your last name right, Pam, first of all? It's Radunsky, right?
That's right.
Thank you for joining us, and again, please forgive me if anything does come across sensationalistic. I'm trying hard to stay away from that. I'm trying really hard not to be an American journalist.
I thank you for your respect.
Well, boy, the questions I have for you, I'm sure you've answered 100 times over, so I'm just wondering. Well, you know what? Actually, let's do this. First off, Pam, seriously, in doing the research for this interview, I came across some information that just stunned me. Is it true that your son Joshua died tragically at the age of 24 just last year?
Yes, that's right.
Wow. Enough already. How do you not look skyward and say enough already?
Well, you do look skyward and say enough already, at least I do. However, I also know that I'm held by a loving God, and so God has provided the strength that we've needed.
I'm unclear as to the details, but I believe he drowned. Is that correct? Fair to say?
Yes, that's right.
I'm just thinking back to the day that you would get that news. A phone call. Who told you? How did you find out?
Actually, his fiance called us because she had received word that he was missing. He had been out with some friends and so she called us, and we all rushed out as a family to be close to the lake where the accident happened. And then the police eventually came and met with us and told us.
Wow. Wow. I am just so sorry. I was gutted when I came across that. I always research on all the interviews, everyone I interview. And when I saw this, I just sat there stunned looking at the computer, and I just felt so bad for you.
Thank you.
What does moving on look like for that? I mean, we're going to talk about, obviously, your sister Kristen and what moving on looks like for that. We're going to talk about forgiveness and redemption and evil. And, I mean, there's just so many questions out of that story. But what does moving on look like when you lose your own son?
It goes the same way it goes for anybody who's experienced a tragedy. You do it one day at a time, with a lot of prayer and a lot of support, which we are blessed to have. And you learn how to live with what's left, with the memories that you have, and we have wonderful memories of Josh. He was a wonderful young man. And so we're blessed to have that and to have the faith that says that there is life after this life. And I know he's safe there.
Tell me about Josh.
Josh was a young man who lived life large. He enjoyed every minute of life that he could. He had his struggles throughout his life, and so did we walking with him. You mentioned teenagers in your segment before.
Yes.
They can certainly be a challenge to parents at times, but through it all, Josh was always a loving young man, and the real witness for us of that, because we knew it within our own family, but at his funeral, there were just hundreds of young people who came to pay their respects.
Hmm.
And that told me he was loved, and that's what life is all about.
Oh, I don't even know how to segue from that to your sister. Let's do the same thing. Tell me about Kristen.
Kristen was also a beautiful spirit. She was a young woman full of life and loved people, loved family, enjoyed everything, and was also surrounded by love. And so I think that she came from that place as well.
I understand you and her sort of were overrun with males in the family?
Yes. There's four brothers in between us. And then since I've married and my brothers have also married and we have additional brothers and sons, and there's a lot of males in the family.
A special time in Florida with Kristen.
Yes. My parents always went to Florida for a time in the winter, and most of the time we just weren't able to do that. But after many years of Dad always asking, we finally decided when our children were 7 and 10, and my husband had just recently switched jobs, that we did, in fact, have the ability and time to go. So we spent a week in Florida with Dad and Donna and Kristen and her friend. And it was just magical. Beyond being at Disney World, which was a wonderful experience with two young children, to have time with Kristen and to watch her play with her niece and nephew was very special.
And what a blessing! I mean, I've done some chaplaincy work, and to have a hospital room filled with people, to have the final conversation with their loved one before they pass, or to have a special moment before they pass, is just so. I mean, it's a blessing.
It's a gift.
Yes. Oh, hugely.
Yes.
Hugely. Would you mind recalling the events starting with that Thursday before Easter weekend, 1992? You arrived at the family home?
Yes. We lived 6 hours north of the family home, and so we had left after Bill finished work and the kids were finished school, and we drove down to the Niagara area. We stayed with my in-laws because they had a farm and additional room for us. And when we arrived there, it was about 11 o'clock at night, and they said, you have to call your dad, which was unusual for us to have to do that at that time of night. So I called, and we were told that Kristen was missing, so we left the kids with my in-laws, and we immediately went over to my dad's, and that was the beginning of the saga.
So about what time of the day did you receive this news, or did you figure it out or put it together?
Well, for us, it was 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
Kristen had actually gone missing when she had not arrived home from school, and she always came home first, no matter what else she was doing. And when she hadn't contacted my parents by 6 o'clock, they knew that something was wrong, because she wasn't the type to do that.
So Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo, from what I understand with the reports that I've read and the details, abducted her in a church parking lot that day?
Yes, that's right.
And so is that a normal path that she would take, cutting through this church parking lot or whatever? What was she doing there?
Actually, it was part of her normal path, but she wasn't cutting through the parking lot. She was just walking on the street.
All right.
It's about, I don't know, not less than a block from the house.
Right.
And they had been parked and called her over to the car to get directions, ostensibly.
Right.
And so that's why she entered into the parking lot. And that's the point at which she was abducted.
And then her shoe was found. I think that was sort of the next step in this whole process. And that's when everybody kind of figured, okay, this is not good?
Yes. Good Friday morning, the police arrived at the door with Kristen's shoe. And Donna, my stepmom, immediately recognized it, and that confirmed the worst fears that we had.
And it's at this point that the outpouring of love from your community, the neighbors, people you don't even know, strangers cutting your grass.
Yes.
The family home. You think back on that now, and overwhelming, would that be the right word to put on it?
Yes. Overwhelming and so uplifting. It just carried us through, really, the time during which Kristen was missing.
Of course, with you and your husband Bill living so far away, I'm assuming you couldn't stay very long. How long did you? It was about a week, I think, that you were down with the family?
Yes, yes. The new position that my husband had, they were very, very understanding, and I wasn't working outside the home at that point in time, so we were able to stay for about a week.
Okay.
But then we had these young children who needed their own routines and school, and that sort of really made us realize that this could be an indefinite period of time. We had no idea how long it would be before Kristen would be found, and so we had to leave to go home.
Tell me about April 30th. This is the day you find out, really, via the media.
Yes. Well, when we went home, both my husband and I found it difficult to concentrate for long periods of time, and that's something that a lot of people who have experienced a trauma will say. And so we often didn't make it through a full day of doing whatever, whether he was at work or whether I was, you know, engaged in some of my volunteer activities. We just found we couldn't always make it through a whole day. So we agreed to meet up, and I was dropping something off at the church for a function that was going to be taking place, and he was just waiting in the car for me to finish up with that. And it was while he was waiting, listening to the news, that he heard a report that a body had been found in the Hamilton area.
So you pack the bags, I'm sure, and head straight back to the family home?
Yes.
And then you hear your father's voice on the radio?
Yes, we had pulled into a gas station in Barrie just to have a bit of a break. And just as we pulled in, thankfully, we heard my dad's voice, and he had been just caught by someone from the media who asked, you know, if he could confirm that the body was Kristen's, and he said yes. So that's how we found out.
Wow. What was that moment like?
Surreal, I guess, would be the first. Although we knew, as soon as Bill heard it on the radio, we knew that it was Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we were in our church parking lot, and he immediately came inside, and we raced upstairs, and we're just held by our pastor and supported by the people who were at the church, you know, to assist us with this recognition. And, in fact, the pastor's wife came to our house and, you know, made sandwiches and cleaned up and, you know, helped us to pack. That's what I mean by that kind of overwhelming support.
You know, as I was reading, one of the things that sent a shiver up my spine was, it turned out that the place where Kristen was being held was very close to friends and family members.
Yes, yes. It was just around the corner from my aunt and uncle's home.
And they would walk by this place, and Kristen was there. And they obviously did not know. I mean, that's just eerie.
Yes, yes. It was very difficult for some of them, especially, feeling very responsible, even though there's no way they could have known.
No. I think back on this, and I think it's burned into everyone's minds much more than this Russell Williams case, because of the length of time it went on, and the media scrum that followed you and followed the family. It's like it ascends or descends upon you like a plague, like a dark cloud. The media. When you look back at the media, do you see them as friend or foe?
Mostly friend, okay. But I do have to admit that I'm married to a journalist.
Uh-oh, cynicism.
that definitely helped the perspective. From the beginning, there were some intrusive moments and certainly, as you mentioned, some sensationalism. But most of the journalists that we encountered were good people who were as upset by this story as anyone else and who were simply doing their job.
Hmm.
And so, and they were also very important to us initially in getting the word out to Kristen to stay strong that, you know, we were searching for her, and also to get the word out to have people come and help to search for Kristen. So the media had its benefits to us as well. And they have always, for the most part, been very respectful of our family.
We are speaking with Pam Radunsky, who is the sister of Kristen French. What were your impressions of Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka when you saw them in person? I'm assuming you did actually see them in person during the court proceedings.
Yes. I guess my first impression was that they looked like everybody else, and I hadn't anticipated that.
Something inside of all of us thinks beast, and then when we look at them, there's a disconnect because they're sort of a Ken and Barbie-looking couple.
Yes. Yes.
Did you ever have any interaction with them?
No. No, there were no opportunities for that.
Thank God?
At the time, probably. Since that time, I've come to be involved with restorative justice work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may be different now. I'm not sure.
Pam, what did you do with all that exposure to evil in your head? What do you do with those thoughts? Because once they're there, I'm wondering about compartmentalization. I'm wondering about disassociation. I'm wondering about all the... What do you do with all that evil?
For me, what I did with it was give it to God. I just recognized very early in the process that I couldn't internalize this. I couldn't make it a part of me, per se. I mean, certain, the loss of Kristen, what it was doing to my family, you know, the pain and that sort of thing, that I had to internalize. That's part of my life. But the evil, I couldn't understand it, and I chose not to try to understand it.
I was talking with some friends of mine about interviewing you today, and they said, "Oh, was she a Christian all the way through this? What point in her life did she, you know, would she consider herself a Christian? Was this a child scenario where as a child you came to Christ, or later on in life?"
I was raised within the church as being a very active participant. Hmm. My parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles were all part of the same small congregation that I was baptized into and confirmed in. Mm. And so my faith has always been an uplifting part of my life. I've been very blessed.
So as a Christian, how do you process forgiveness in all of this? Is it any easier? Because I've often said later in the show, after we're finished with you, Pam, we're going to open up the phone lines and ask people what they think about the death penalty and Colonel or former Colonel Russell Williams, and we started personalizing this. So what if this happened to your child? How would you feel, and the rage, and you know the unpredictability of your emotions, and then forgiveness? Where does that stand? And I think we tend to as a Christian community rattle on about forgiveness without personalizing it that much.
That's a really good comment to make, and I probably would have been guilty of the same thing at one point. I have come to learn that forgiveness is a word that is weighted with huge, huge meaning for people, but we all have to discern for ourselves what that meaning is.
Mm-hmm.
And so to glibly say, I forgive you, just doesn't cut it with me
no.
anymore. It would have at one time.
Have you forgiven Paul Bernardo?
I've done what I felt I could do in regards to forgiveness, and that was to give Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka to God.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I reflect on scriptures where David in the Psalms basically told God to get his enemies.
And that initially was a response that some of us worked with. But for me, and especially having spent a lot of time talking and thinking and praying and having benefit of being able to connect with many, many more people whose stories are just as horrendous, if not more so, it's not about that anymore. Mm. I don't believe that the vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I think is much more similar to me to what your previous guest, Sharon, was talking about.
Oh, you were listening online, were you?
I was. I also like to be prepared, if possible.
Good for you. Good for you. Do you think, I don't know whether I should go down. Oh, okay. Carla or Paul, which one do you have a harder time with? Did you have a harder time with? Could you forgive one easier than the other? Carla being released a few years ago. Do you respond differently to either of them?
I don't feel that I did. I guess what I responded to was people's perception that perhaps women couldn't be as
evil,
couldn't make as evil choices,
right,
as men could, and so we tended to, as a society even, look at women differently.
So, do you think we were too easy on Carla?
We is the judicial system? Is that what you're
talking about? Well, you're right. Let's separate this. We as society, were we easier on Carla because she was the female, the poor help me, he messed with my head, he's the one who messed me up, he sucked me into this, and plus back to the female and the pretty female. You know, it's amazing how we look at people and we do judge based on what they look like, and if she was an ugly, nasty, gnarly-looking woman, it might have a different impact, but she was a pretty female. And I wonder if, as a society, we gave her a little too much slack.
That might have been the case, because I believe that her choices to do evil were as much as Paul Bernard.
Right, right. Wow. When Carla was released, what did that day bring to your emotions?
I recognized that she would be released. At some point, we knew what the deal was, and so I believed that, I don't believe I was surprised by it, and in, again, the work that I've done, I believe that while I might not have agreed with the plea bargain, I didn't agree with the plea bargain, that was what the law dictated, and she had served her time. And my prayer at that point was that she would not be making choices that were evil, mm-hmm, to continue her life.
We're speaking with Pam Radunsky, who is the sister of Kristen French. Pam, restorative justice is a term that I've been a little bit more familiar with over the last 7 years since I've been doing the show. Are you still the board member of the Church Council on Justice and Corrections?
No, I'm not. Okay. I finished my term there.
Okay. I know someone else who's quite involved in restorative justice, and I've had her on the show as well, Wilma Dirksen.
Yes.
When I hear restorative justice, I need some education here, so learn me up.
Okay.
It evokes images of hippies loving on bad people no matter what they've done.
That's really wrong.
Okay. it's light a candle, make them a little cross to hang around their neck, and get children to write them letters, and love on the Carlas and the Pauls of the world, because that's what we should do.
Yeah. No, I don't subscribe to that vision of restorative justice. Restorative justice for me, and I've done a fair amount of research and work in the field, means that both of us are willing to come to the table to talk about what has happened, to honestly share the impact that has happened, and to try to seek some way of living with that.
What does that look like practically at the end of the day? What's restorative justice look like?
It depends upon what's happening, but the experience that I had with it was it looks like an opportunity for someone who's been victimized to actually have some power and control over how the situation is dealt with, which is not often the case in the criminal justice system today. It also brings that the person who has caused harm into the light of the harm that they have caused. They may or may not be fully aware of the impact of what they've done. And if that can happen, where they themselves become convicted within themselves of the harm that they have caused, it will have life-changing impact on them.
Pam, if Paul Bernardo or Carla Homolka tried to contact you, would you agree to that?
I would want to know the circumstances around their wish to try to communicate, and I would want to do it within a very structured, restorative practice way, because there are a lot of potential
landmines.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are people trained to deal with these sorts of serious offense crimes, and the people who have, you know, been impacted by them or who have perpetrated them. And I would definitely want that kind of protection.
With technology being as it is today, this show is streaming online, mm-hmm. drewmarshall.ca, as you know, you were listening.
Yes.
There's a chance that Carla's listening right now, or that Paul might be listening from prison?
Yep.
Would you say something to them right now?
Wow, Drew. I would say, go to God. And I would say that believing in the loving God that I believe in, but also believing in the God who, as Sharon said, I just, that was an amazing part just before you talked with me. When that fire of God lights upon us, all of us, because we all fall short, then we will truly know where we are.
That's all you'd say?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry. There shouldn't be long pauses in radio, but I'm trying to digest what you're saying. With the former Colonel Williams, Russell Williams, case being in the news this last little while, I'm going to talk about this in the next segment, and when we're finished with Pam here, we're going to open up the phone lines and talk about the death penalty and whether people think he should be executed or not. Do you think that, well, how do you feel about capital punishment, first of all?
I'm against capital punishment.
Okay.
I was before this happened,
nothing's changed. Okay. Do you see a difference between former Colonel Russell Williams and Paul Bernardo?
I probably don't know enough about it to state.
Have you shielded yourself intentionally from?
I haven't tried to follow it to any great degree, no.
No. Too many triggers, maybe?
It certainly can trigger, yeah. Yes. And that's one of the choices that I can make to exert control over my life.
This is one of those interviews that I will say is a highlight for me. The things you have said and the way you've processed this hell that you've been through, the evil that you've been exposed to, combined with the fact that you just lost your 24-year-old son last year, I'm astounded.
That's grace. For me, that's grace.
Well, may I experience that one of these days.
I pray you do.
Yeah, yeah. Although I don't want to have to go through the hell that you've gone through. I really don't. Pam, thank you for your heart and for spending some time with us today on the show.
I thank you for inviting me, Drew.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk again. I hope so.
Okay.
Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. That has been our journey segment for the day. And Melinda?
I'm actually tearing. Mm-hmm. I thought you were tearing there for a little bit.
No, I don't do that.
No, you don't. Do you? Maybe after the show. You know, I think it's a beautiful thing for communicators like us that we like to talk and inspire people and make these profound, you know, quippy sentences and say these things. But I was really silenced hearing her because it was just very simple.
It was simple, concise, soft, warm.
And it was her truth. It was,
yeah.
You know what, Paul and Carla, go to God. And how can you survive through all this? It's grace.
It's amazing how the rest of us have said, Paul, Carla, go to hell.
Exactly. Exactly. And she just says, I live through this because of God's grace that's been demonstrated to me. That's powerful.
Yeah, very much so. Folks, if you just tuned in and you missed the start of that interview with Pam Brodunski, who is Christian French's sister, we'll have that on our website, as we do each and every week with all of our material posted by the end of the week, and you can go and listen to all of our archives there, drewmarshall.ca. We're going to take a short break, and the segue from that to should former Colonel Russell Williams be executed. Even those who typically oppose the death penalty have wavered on this one. Of course, last week, one of Canada's top military men was convicted and sentenced to life in prison, which in Canada means 25 years, and sometimes less. This after he subjected Jessica Lloyd, 27, and Corporal Marie France Como, 37, to hours of beatings, bondage, and repeated sexual assaults, all of which was recorded on video and photographed. Both girls were then killed after pleading for their lives, and the list of deviant crimes committed by Williams was so horrific that, and so long that it took the court clerk 34 minutes to read them into record. So can a case ever be made for capital punishment? Yes or no? 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. We are going to take a short break and come back with your phone calls here on The Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
Oh, love that fires the sun, keep me burning.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Oh, love that fires the sun, keep me burning.